P-14. Connected. An impossibly sharp pain jolted Dan McCarthy to life, concentrated in but not confined to the back of his neck. It subsided, thankfully, but even after the eye-watering peak, it remained more intense than anything he had experienced for a long time, and quite likely ever. The only occasions even remotely comparable had all been alien, and more specifically cable-related, and in these moments of almost all-consuming pain, the only thing Dan could hope was that eventually it would be a memory too. Far more quickly than he could have hoped or even imagined in this case, it was. As quickly as it had come, the pain was gone, instantly and utterly replaced by something that couldn't be correctly described as a feeling. Although he knew he was conscious, Dan McCarthy didn't feel it. This wasn't to say he felt unconscious, however, and on the contrary, he seemed to be experiencing something akin to super-consciousness. With no understanding of what was happening, much less any way of considering it in logical terms, Dan felt as though he was experiencing the universe as one. Perhaps more accurately, he somehow felt he was the universe and everything in it. Enough of his human mind remained active to try to contextualize this with something akin to an infinitely amplified version of an acid trip, like the kind he'd read about but never wished to experience for himself. This experience had begun at the moment when the architect connected to its own hand the other end of the communication cable he had already connected to Dan's neck. That initial connection had been what first jolted Dan awake, after his unshielded proximity to the source of the sonic field that sent everyone else scurrying had very suddenly gotten the better of his body and mind. Now, however, all of that was in the past. Now, Dan felt like he had been mainlined into the architect's brain, and in truth, that wasn't all too far from what had happened. This cable was of a different kind than the messengers had been granted, very evidently. But what was equally evident to Dan now was just how different the architect himself was from Leisha and Sacco's kind. Dan instantly considered the architect to be male, quite possibly an inherently biased assumption based on his own standing and amplified by the fact that Leisha and Sacco, his closest alien contacts by far, both fell on the male side of their species' dimorphic coin. Unlike when he considered, but didn't explicitly voice a question while connected in any way to the messengers, Dan didn't get any confirmation or refutation that his assumption was correct. All he got, if all had been the right word rather than the wrongest word possible, was a sensation of total access to knowledge that was more mentally overwhelming than even the feelings he'd experienced when viewing the transcripts within New Kerguelen's outpost for the first time. It didn't feel to Dan like any information was filling his mind or even that it was thrashing against a window too small for the tidal wave to fit through. Nor did it feel like he was drowning in information or unable to make sense of any particular detail, because as far as he could discern, there were no details, at least none that stood out over any other. Deciding to focus on his breathing in an effort to center himself, Dan did all he could to ignore the multisensory influx of data. The multisensory aspect of this inundation was the one most reminiscent of his transcript viewing experiences, when merely glancing upon a QR-like image had sent remarkably dense and deep visual images running through his mind, like videos sped up 1,000 times without losing any of their clarity. Today, however, it was more like those metaphorical videos had been sped up to the point of incoherence, and in reflecting on this point, while pleased he was at least lucid enough to be consciously reflecting on anything, Dan could only assume that his mind was simply unable to keep up with whatever the architect was trying to share. So he's trying to share something, Dan thought to himself, wary of assuming too much and certainly any good intentions, but growing surer of this as the seconds passed.
I am, a deep and hoarse voice replied at the back of his mind. The sensation was remarkable, as though Dan really was hearing the voice even though he knew his ears were playing no part.
I hear you, Dan said. He was replying silently, of course, but via the new and remarkable cable attached to his neck, rather than the currently redundant and now broken patch it had pierced through on its way to his skin and beyond.
Can you stop whatever this interchange is and just talk? I can understand when you talk. At once, the indescribable influx of information that had been stretching Dan's tired mind to its limit ceased. He could see again, surprised to be looking down at the architect from a floating position. Perhaps unsurprisingly, but no less disconcertingly, Dan found that he was utterly immobilized and thus unable to turn and see where Emma and Clark were in an effort to reassure them that he was okay. He tried to call out to them, too, momentarily forgetting about the soundproof force field Leisha had put them inside a short while earlier. Without the influx of data rendering his senses more or less out of commission, Dan could feel an uncomfortable sensation that came with floating in the air. The only comparable feeling that came to mind was of the initial drop on a roller coaster, or perhaps the feeling of a similar kind that came when a car crested over a particularly steep hill. In any event, Dan was aware of this enough to calmly ask to be lowered to the ground. "No," the architect replied, failing to expand on why or indeed for how long his answer would remain so. Now that it had truly begun, this conversation felt easier and more natural than Dan's early conversations with the messengers. This wasn't only because he was more experienced, although that might have played some part, but rather owed a lot to the evident superiority of the cable-based connection the architect had established. By virtue of hearing the architect's voice as clearly as he did, Dan felt very much like he was in an internally straightforward conversation. Internally straightforward, while slightly clumsy in a linguistic sense, was certainly a more appropriate term than normal to describe a conversation that saw its two participants connected by a tentacle-like cable while one was suspended in mid-air, but Dan felt far more in control of his own thoughts, if nothing else, than he had when first conversing with the messengers at Lolo and trying to figure out which thought was which. "Well," Dan said after a few seconds of mental silence, which gave him the sense that the architect was waiting for him to speak first. "What do you want? You came here. You called me to come to you."
"We have disabled your planet's violent nuclear capabilities," the architect replied.
While its words remained deep and hoarse, Dan was used to that by now and was no longer scared of the voice. Now he was focused entirely on the words themselves. Dan's eyes, the only muscles he could control, as was the case whenever a messenger immobilized a human, widened at these words, surprising as they were. So Geller was right about something? Ding was actually planning to do something with his nukes while Godfrey was out of the picture? The architect's eyes didn't narrow as expressively as Leisha's did when he was perplexed, or in a moment of particularly intense focus, but Dan saw some kind of twitch.
"This is why we didn't want to engage with you," the architect said,
the tone different and sounding like it should have been accompanied by a frustrated teenage eye roll rather than an eye narrowing.
"This is why we couldn't leave you unchecked. Nowhere else in the universe have we discovered another species so intelligent and so aggressive, so socially competent, and yet so socially competitive."
That the architect's hoarse voice was delivering not just clear words directly into Dan's mind, but now delivering borderline poetic words added a surreal layer to an already remarkable interaction. It was as though the architect was so mentally advanced it could communicate its own detailed thoughts in a way Dan could understand, not just clearly, but vividly. This vividness was a real difference between Dan's current conversation and even those he had with his close and familiar friend Leisha, and it made the process of learning from this seemingly and surprisingly willing to teach architect far easier than would otherwise have been the case.
"Your kind alone has both the ability to develop these kinds of advanced technologies and the propensity to form these kinds of pointless intraspecies rivalries," it went on. "We have never seen anything like it, and believe me, we have looked."
Despite his own acute disdain for both weapons of mass destruction and humanity's persistent inability to cooperate internationally when it counted most, Dan found himself naturally defending his species by inverting the argument. Coming from you. Coming from the liars who did what they did on New Kerguelen.
To contain you, the architect snapped back. You have seen the carvings. You know we have been here before. The social and technological intelligence of your species, evolving as it was, brought us here. Almost immediately, the aggression sent us home. Our ethos of minimal necessary intervention, which I know you are indirectly familiar with via those you know as messengers, precluded us from wiping out your kind before the problems we feared could arise. Instead, we chose to guard against those problems.
Dan said nothing, his silence encouraging the architect to continue.
Continue it did. We gave you breathing space, and for a long time we were glad. Yes, you are imperfect, but so are we. And through the imperfection, your species creates beauty from nothing, but imagination in a way that we could only dream of. The variation of your cultures within one species is not just unparalleled and unmatched, but entirely unseen anywhere else. At every juncture, we have given you every chance we could. We did seek to hide your ancestors' record of our initial contact, which has since come to light, but other than...
So why did you let us find it now? Dan asked, cutting in to satisfy a curiosity that was instantly and utterly unbearable. If you didn't want us to know, why did you suddenly change your mind? And why did you leave New Kerguelen and stop talking to the messengers? In fact, start there. Why did you have to put them through so much? I saw the transcripts in your outpost, so I know you wanted them to do the bulk of the work in keeping track of us, but why did you need to run all that bullshit with the caste system and repressing their history?
So many questions, the architect said. We did no more than necessary on the planet you refer to as New Kerguelen. That species lacks much of what makes humanity so unique. They were pliable and deferent.
You mean they were easily domesticated? Dan asked, wishing he could shake his head to punctuate the disdain he felt for this architect and his species' behavior towards the kindly messengers. They were too nice for their own good?
Nice and simple are not synonymous. Humans are nice in almost all cases. Humans are simple in almost none.
And the other questions? Dan asked.
Your engagement with the messengers changed our perspective. You were kind and selfless in a way we hadn't quite realized, and I do mean you specifically, as well as your species as a whole. You helped them while asking little to nothing in return, and we saw that they were willing to do the same. The unexpected depth of your engagement, which we would have initially prevented if we had known would become so deep, changed the dynamics of our observation completely. No species we have encountered.
The smalls, Dan said. What about the smalls? Not them, I mean, yeah, them, but sanctuary. What about sanctuary?
The transcripts you recently discovered were real and true. That is a world with an atmosphere ideally suited to sustaining species from both Earth and New Kerguelen in an emergency situation.
If Dan could have shrugged, his shoulders would have raised halfway to his forehead. I don't care about the transcripts. Tell me about the time gate. You mastered time? I traveled through time?
We did not master time, the architect replied. We tried, but time humbled us. And believe me, Dan McCarthy, if you go through that gate again, time will humble you.